During the summer last year, I chose to not take any classes, and I got a job at a gas station right next to my college campus. I was sort of disillusioned with school and wanted to make some money while I had time off. The gas station was one of the first places I tried applying to, and it turned out to be the last when they hired me on the spot. Thought it was a little weird, but I didn't question it. Unfortunately, they said they only wanted me for the night shift, which was from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. I knew it would wreak havoc on my already messed up sleep schedule, but I decided to go for it and just see how it went. To my surprise, most of the time it wasn't that bad. The first few hours of the shift were pretty busy and it would get crazy, but then it would always get really slow until about 5 in the morning, which gave me plenty of time to clean, stock the shelves, and chill out until the morning rush. Occasionally, somebody suspicious or problematic would wander in, but I never had anything get too out of hand. Well, that was of course until something did happen. It was a Thursday, which wasn't usually a busy night. I had a coworker until about midnight, then they went home and I was left alone. Time went by pretty fast, and before I knew it, it was almost 2 a.m. That's around the time a man walked in, and I immediately had a bad feeling about him. He had a shaved head and a bunch of tattoos of weird symbols, so I was pretty sure he was a skinhead. I noticed he had parked his dirty old lifted pickup truck in the handicap spot too, but I didn't want to get on his case about it, and I ended up getting called slurs because I looked Jewish to him. It was 1:58 when he walked in, and he spent a few minutes wandering around the store. In the end though, all he brought up to buy was a case of beer. However, by then it was 2:01, and my county has a law that says alcohol can't be purchased between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. I told the man that, and politely and apologetically as I could, that he couldn't buy the beer. He immediately became agitated and went off on a rant about how it was a free country and that was a stupid law. I tried my best to reason with him, and I said that I was just trying to do my job, but this only made him start to criticize me like I was some kind of spineless pawn for my boss. That's when I asked him to leave if he was going to be that way. Then he suddenly changed his tone again, acting all chummy and saying it wasn't a big deal, and that I should bend the rules for just a few minutes, since it was before 2 when he walked in. I mean, he kind of did make a good point, so I eventually caved just so he would get out. I sold him the case of beer, and then of course, he asked for a pack of cigarettes to go with it. I let him have it as there was no rule against tobacco sales. He smiled at me and then left the store, and I breathed a sigh of relief. But that relief was short-lived, however. Thought he would get in his truck and leave, but instead he opened the tailgate and sat down on the truck bed, cracked open a can of beer and started drinking it. Now I had a feeling that this was far from over, and that was exactly the case. Because a few minutes later, another truck pulled up right next to his and a couple of guys got out, both of them with shaved heads and tattoos. They stood around the back of the first guy's truck just smoking and drinking. I knew I had to go out there and tell them that they couldn't loiter in front of the store, and that it was illegal to drink out in the open like that anyway, especially that close to a car. But I was a little scared already. They kept looking in the window at me, just smirking, as if they knew what I was thinking and they were challenging me to try it. Before I could find the courage though, another car, this time an SUV, pulled in next to the two of them, and two more guys got out and joined the others. They were all a part of the same skinhead group without a doubt. My guess is they were coming from a bar that had just closed and didn't want to end the night yet. That was the most reasonable and most likely explanation, but my paranoid thoughts made me think they were about to get together and burn down the store, because the owner's wife was Mexican. And then the first guy came back into the store. He was drunker than before and all smiles, but then he came back to the register with another case of beer. I was about to tell him he definitely couldn't buy at that time, but before I could even open my mouth, he looked at me all smug and said, I really wouldn't want to disappoint him and all of his friends. I took that as a pretty solid threat and I let him do what he wanted again. My hands were shaking and I was dreading having to count change in front of him, but then he told me to keep the change like he was giving me some kind of big tip. He walked back outside and all the skinheads cheered at the fresh case of beer. Apparently they had worked together and finished all 24 cans of the previous one. And then I realized that they had been tossing the empty cans all over the ground and kicking them around. It felt like I was completely stuck with these pricks, and I knew I would get in trouble over it at best, or get literally ganged up on, and have any manner of horrible things done to me just for saying no to them. What normal person would see the meeting of a bunch of drunk skinheads smoking cheap cigarettes on top of their pickup trucks in front of a store in the middle of the night and still want to walk past them to get in? Pretty much nobody. Not a single person, except more of the skinheads. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I walked up and I locked the door so they couldn't get back in. Then I walked back in the office and called the police. Several minutes later, a cruiser showed up and told him to screw off. There was some shouting outside that I couldn't quite make out, but I was worried for a few minutes that things would escalate. Thankfully, they left without causing too much of a scene, but I have no idea how close it got. The cop waited for them to leave before doing so himself. But right before he got on his way, I came out and asked him to stay a while I cleaned up their mess, in case they decided to show up and kick my ass for ruining their little party. The next day, I unfortunately had to quit that job. There was nothing more terrifying to me than the thought of being stuck behind that register if those guys ever decided to come back. Still, I kind of get worried that one of them will see me around town and recognize me. Don't know what those people are all capable of. All I know is my town is full of dudes like that, and they're always causing problems. Years ago, I worked as a barista at a locally owned coffee shop that doubles as a popular venue for local artists and musicians to host all sorts of small-time gigs. Even today, it gets most of its business in the evenings during the open mics, and it stays open until 2 in the morning. However, when I worked there pre-2020, they were open 24/7 from Thursday to Sunday. For the most part, everyone that worked there hated the graveyard shift. It was easy hours, but the tips were abysmal, as barely anyone came in. As far as myself was considered, however, I didn't mind the lower pay. What I hated was being alone and running the only place that was still open for miles. The shop was in a good part of town, if not a little close to a bad part, but the fact of the matter is that there's really no such thing as a good side of town during these overnight hours. That is, if we're being completely honest. I was advised to never keep more than $50 in the drawer during the graveyard shift for a reason. I was always afraid that somebody would drag me into the back of the store, so every time I was scheduled for the overnight shift, I asked one of my male friends to come hang out with me. The one guy that would help me more than anyone else was named Nick. It usually turned out to be a good time. I made some money and I slipped him some beers under the table, and of course, I felt much more comfortable not being a woman on her own. Nick would work on his laptop while I was busy, and we would talk when things were slow. We had been friends for a while, but we became close after spending a lot of time together. It was always platonic, though. Nick was also friends with many of my coworkers, and lots of us joked that Nick knew so much about the coffee shop that he might as well work there himself. He always laughed it off and said his career in photography was more important, which we always gave him a hard time for. I didn't really think there would ever be any bad blood between us, and if there was, I was sure it'd be because we slipped up and had an awkward one-night stand. But then came a slow Saturday night in the summer of 2019. I was working the last overnight shift of the weekend. I had worked the last two nights in a row without Nick, because he had bailed on me to go to a wedding for one of his family members. I managed to get another friend of mine to fill in for him for Thursday and Friday, but on Saturday night, they were too tired and never showed up. I was anxious about being alone in the shop, but I knew I could manage. Thankfully, it was surprisingly slow that night for some reason, and by 3, I had only made $10 in tips, but I was glad I didn't have to deal with any crazy people. Unfortunately, that's when things took a dark turn. The shop was completely empty except for me. I was putting a batch of coffee into the roaster when out of the corner of my eye, I saw a figure walk past the front window. I glanced over, but there was nobody there. I waited for someone to come around to the back door, which customers could also use, but a full minute had passed now, and nobody came. I stuck around by the register for a few more minutes, but after nobody showed up for a while, I decided it was time to mop the floors. I went into the back to fill up the mop bucket, and of course, as soon as I turned the faucet on, I heard somebody come in through the front door. I shouted that I would be with them in just a minute. Then I finished filling up the bucket and rolled it out behind the counter. When I got there, whoever came in had disappeared. I shrugged it off, just figuring they had gone straight to the bathroom, and then I started mopping behind the counter. The strangest feeling hovered over me, though. I couldn't place what it was, but I knew something was wrong. The first thing I looked at was the drawer, but it hadn't been broken into. Even then, that would have been loud enough for me to hear over the running water. I leaned over the bar and checked the bathroom doors. The men's room door was closed and the light was on, so I knew somebody was in there. My stomach churned slightly as I knew it was a man in there, but so far, I had no real reason to think anything was wrong, so I just kept on mopping. When I finally got finished behind the counter, the bathroom door opened, and to my surprise, Nick walked out. I immediately felt a sense of relief, but I had to ask him what he was doing there. He explained that he just got home from the wedding and thought he'd stop by and say hi. I was grateful that he decided to show up, so I told him he could have whatever he wanted on the house. So I got behind the espresso machine and got to work pulling a shot. I packed the grounds into the portafilter and locked it into the machine, then looked over to say something to Nick. But whatever I was thinking of saying was immediately forgotten. His facial expression had gone from friendly to devilish in just a moment of time. And suddenly a wave of chills went through my body. "What are you doing?" I asked, fighting back trembling. Nick grinned like a psychopath and pulled a knife out from behind his back. "I'm finally going to bang the barista," he said as he started to laugh. "Don't be crazy," I shouted. "We're friends. What about the cameras?" Nick began walking forward, forcing me to backpedal. "We are friends," he said, "and nobody will believe you because the cameras aren't even on. They never are. How do you not know that?" I knew at this point I was being pushed into the back of the shop, and my throat started to close up. It was also in that moment when I looked for an exit that I realized he had locked both the doors and turned the open sign off, keeping anybody from coming in. "Your boss already thinks we do this every night," Nick pressed on, inching closer and closer. "Stop it," I shouted in desperation, looking for something to defend myself, trying to not slip on the wet floor. "Shut up," he screamed. "You should have been giving this to me for months already. Do not know how much time I wasted on you." I was pleading and about to be cornered. The last hope I had was something on the sandwich counter. In the last moment before he pushed me out of sight into the back of a shop, I grabbed for the panini press and ripped it off the table, slamming the corner of the metal against the side of his head. He tried to block me and sliced open my arm, but I connected the hit. And combined with the water on the floor, the blow knocked him off of his feet. I wasted 0 seconds in climbing over the counter and rushing out of the back door and into my car while I locked myself in and called the police. It wasn't until I thought about driving off that I realized Nick had parked his car in front of mine to deliberately keep me from getting away. Moments later, while I was on the phone with the operator, he came outside and attempted to break his way into my car. After he failed to do so for several minutes, he gave up and drove off not long before the police arrived. I was treated for my wound, and I gave my statement about what happened. I didn't leave out a single detail. I was too much in a state of shock to be even in disbelief. As it turns out, he was right about the cameras inside the shop, just being for show. However, nobody thought I was lying about what he did. Unfortunately, though, due to civil liabilities on the part of my employer, and more importantly, the fact that Nick completely up and disappeared after posting bail, I decided to drop the charges. Came to the conclusion not long after that he had already ruined his life sufficiently, and I simply didn't care enough to do anything else about it. Nobody has seen or heard from Nick in years, and the coffee shop has since stopped staying open overnight. People might think I quit because of what happened, but I actually continued to work there until just a few months ago. Before I moved out of my hometown, I was working as a waiter at Waffle House. I chose to work the third shift because it had the best hourly pay and brought in pretty good tips, due to us being the only 24/7 diner in the entire town. It took me about a year to save up enough money though to rent a place in the city and get out of the middle of nowhere, but in that time, I saw quite a few things that still stick with me to this day. By and large, most of the customers I had were truckers and other random people traveling on the interstate through the middle of the night. The town was just a stopover point, not a destination as much. The quote-unquote locals consisted of farmers and ranchers from the surrounding area, and anyone else like me worked in the fast food and hotel chains clustered around the interstate exit. The final and yet the most characteristic residents of that depressing cesspit of a town were the vagrants, hitchhikers, tweakers, and destitute opportunists that had been stranded with us. They could be stuck there from anywhere to a few days to several years, clinging to the parking lots and awnings that were the only meager shelter for dozens of miles in any direction, panhandling for whatever they could, until they got lucky enough to get a ride to somewhere else. Really, the only stressful part of my job was dealing with these people. In the beginning, I tried to be empathetic. After all, they are human. However, it didn't take long to end up like my usual coworker, the cook that had been there for 15 years and had seen just about everything. His name was Carl, and the only thing separating him from them was a steady position at the grill. Nobody ever got a chair thrown at them, as far as I know, but Carl was prone to throwing turners and other utensils at anyone who got on his bad side. I usually followed his lead based on his body language. He knew who was trouble and who wasn't. However, even with Carl as a reliable backup, things sometimes got out of hand there. There was this one night that I'll never forget. I don't remember what day of the week it was, but all I know was that it had been unusually slow that night. It was around 4 o'clock in the morning when this guy walked in, and even I knew something was not right about him. He was wearing soiled clothes and a completely torn up jacket, covered head to toe in dust, and he was in a completely panicked state of mind. The weird thing was that he said nothing as he ran past us, clutching his right arm to his chest and immediately locking himself in the bathroom. Carl and I rolled our eyes at the same time. Here we go again, we thought. Although I think we both had a feeling this wasn't a regular hobo bathroom emergency, or a tweaker looking for a private place to do their thing. That's when I asked Carl, doesn't he kind of look familiar? He brushed it off at first, but then after a short conversation, we realized that he had been inside about 2 hours ago, desperately asking all the customers for rides, until eventually we had to kick him out for being a disturbance. It seemed he obviously hadn't had any luck on getting a ride, but something else had happened to him too. I became worried. If that guy needed help, it would be a while before an ambulance could get to him, and even longer for them to take him to a hospital. Carl told me to take care of it, so I ran the check for the only customer we had in the store at the time and got them on their way. When I took the bathroom keys and went to check on our stranger in distress, I knocked on the door pretty loud and asked if everything was okay. There was a pause. Then finally, a distraught voice answered me. I think I'm really hurt. I just need a ride. Suddenly, I knew something was seriously wrong. The sound of his voice made the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. I fumbled with the key ring as I told him I was about to open the door. Sir, if you need help, I have to come in there, I shouted. No, the stranger screamed. You have to come get me. I stopped for a second, confused, but then I snapped out of it and shoved the key in the lock and turned it, then opened the door to a terrifying sight. The bathroom was empty. Completely empty. No injured man, no blood, no dust, just nothing. It was as clean as it had been since I last cleaned it, as if nobody had been in there at all. In fact, it even looked cleaner than that. What's going on in there? Carl shouted from the kitchen. I was just at a loss. I let the bathroom door close and I stepped back. I looked at Carl and told him the truth. There's nobody in there, I said. Don't give me that, Carl shouted. See for yourself, I told him. And he did. He stormed over and barged through the bathroom door. I saw him go blank just like I did when he saw it. The impossible absence of a person. He turned around and looked inside the woman's room too. But again, nothing. Nobody. In raw disbelief, we gathered ourselves behind the counter. We interrogated each other uselessly, thinking one of us must have let him slip by unnoticed. However, we both knew we had been on high alert since the second he came in. There was no way neither of us would have not noticed him leaving. Within a fraction of a second, our conversation ended as we both saw the same thing out of the corner of our eyes. The stranger was somehow outside, looking at us through the window. He still had his right arm stuffed out of sight. But now, as we got more of an eyeful of his face than we ever wanted to, we saw that wasn't his only problem. His face was bloody, like he'd been hit with a brick. His nose was broken into, and lip was split and missing a piece, showing us his cracked and missing teeth. One of his eyes seemed completely swollen over, but the one that was open was gushing blood. Carl and I didn't move a muscle. We didn't even breathe for a second. After a few horrible seconds of realizing what was happening, I finally thought to call 911. But as soon as the idea occurred to me, the man started to move. He turned to the side and started to limp across the big front window. We watched him in silence. He made it all the way to the corner of the window, where it wrapped around to the other side. "What the hell?" I whispered, only for Carl to quickly shush me. It was at that moment I saw he had gone pale and wide-eyed, which only terrified me even more. Something about this man had gotten through Carl's defenses, and that meant we were not prepared. Before we could say anything else, we heard a crash from the back room. We both ran inside and searched for the source of the noise. It was coming from the walk-in freezer. Somebody was tearing things up and freaking out. Carl ran up there and threw open the door, and there he was. That guy. He had ripped open a box of burger patties and was clutching a handful of meat, pressing it to his right arm like an ice pack. When he saw us, he froze. The patties dropped from his hand and revealed the condition of his arm. His hand was stuck in a thumbs up position, but his wrist had been snapped clean off, and his hand was dangling from the rest of his arm by a thread of skin. After a terrifying moment of deer in headlights stares, the stranger bolted from the freezer, crashing through both me and Carl. He sprinted outside screaming before we had a chance to react. I stumbled to my feet as Carl ran out to the dining area and locked the front doors and switched off all the lights. Then he pushed me back into the back room and started yelling at me. "How could you leave the back door unlocked?" he yelled. "No, look, it's still locked." I pointed to the back door, and sure enough, it was locked. Now absolutely nothing was making sense, but we gave up on trying to decipher it. For the rest of the night until the sun came up and the morning crew came in, we kept the doors locked and stayed out of sight. When we were finally freed from our nightmare of a shift and set out into the world, we noticed a train of police and paramedics on the freeway right outside of town. We asked around only to find out that a man had been killed in a hit and run right there at the off-ramp, not even 1,000 feet from the Waffle House. He died sometime after midnight, but his body laid on the shoulder, undiscovered until daylight. His corpse was mangled, but his thumb was still sticking straight up from trying to hitch a ride. Of course, by the afternoon, they had scraped him off the pavement and washed away his blood, until the spot in which he died was cleaner than I had ever seen it. I used to work as a night clerk in a downtown condominium. The association had a lot of security concerns due to the way the building was constructed back in the late 60s. Both levels of the parking garage were accessible from street level, so there were a lot of possible entry points, many of which were located in blind spots of the security camera system. For that reason, I was required to make 2 rounds around the entire building during my shift to make sure no non-residents had found their way in. The most serious issue that we had was the occasional carjacking, but what I encountered most often was homeless people who had found their way into the garage and were huddling in some corner for a bit of shelter. Kicking them back out into the street was by far my least favorite part of the job, but I had to do it. After working there for several months, I knew all the spots that people liked to hide in. The building was very old and had undergone many renovations in its lifetime, which created a lot of nooks and crannies, unnecessary concrete protrusions, sealed-off rooms, and hallways and stairs that led to nowhere. The creepiest spot in the whole building was so weird and potentially dangerous that I took a picture of it and I brought it up to management. On the first floor of the garage, there was a door that opened up to a corridor directly underneath the ramp, up to the second level of the garage. It was about 3 feet wide and ran about 20 to 30 feet, but it led to literally nowhere. At the end of it was a large water pipe with a valve, which was the only reason the space existed. But in the dark, with just a weak flashlight, that pipe seemed to take many other forms. What made it dangerous, however, was the lock on the door. There was no padlock or keyhole on either side, but on the outside was a large sliding bolt latch. There was only one way in or out, and it locked from the outside with no way to unlock it from the inside. Ever since I discovered the spot, I couldn't help but imagine how easy it would be for someone to get trapped in there. However, nothing I said to management made any difference. They were already aware of it and had no intention of doing anything about it. Unfortunately, that meant I would have to open the door and check on it every night, but I never stepped foot inside of it. I was way too scared of it. Things went on like that for months, and then one day, my worst fear was realized. It was about 3 in the morning, halfway through my shift. I was doing my rounds in the parking garage, and everything was normal. It was a slow Wednesday night. There hadn't been any problems or suspicious activity on the cameras, so I was far from on edge at the time. But then, in one moment, I was forced to go on alert. I heard the sound of a door slamming across the garage. I wasn't exactly sure where it was, so I walked over to investigate. My heart sank a bit when I saw that the door to the dead-end hallway was wide open. I looked around to see if anyone was in the garage, but I appeared to be alone. I shouted to intimidate anyone if they were hiding somewhere I couldn't see, but I got no response and nobody appeared. I was just worried that there was somebody hiding in the dead-end hallway, so I walked the rest of the way. I shined my flashlight down the hallway, and for a moment, I was relieved to see that nobody was in there. There was, however, an empty glass bottle about 10 feet inside. I sighed and rolled my eyes, thinking that somebody had been drinking in there, and they ran out in a hurry once they saw me snooping around, accidentally making noise as they rushed. It wouldn't have been that hard for somebody to climb up on the cars parked there, to get above the wall and hop the fence into the neighboring parking lot by the time I got there, since the garage was partially underground in that spot. In fact, that's how a lot of people get in, because the dead-end hallway happened to be in a prominent blind spot of the cameras. Unfortunately, I wasn't allowed to leave trash anywhere if I saw it, so I knew I had to pick up that bottle. Of course, I felt the anxiety bubbling up inside my gut just for knowing I had to walk a few steps inside that hallway. I almost didn't do it, but I rationalized myself into thinking there was no way somebody would pop out and lock me in. I took a deep breath and stepped inside, but right as I reached the bottle, the door slammed shut. I immediately ran back to the door, but by the time I got there, it was already locked. I started banging on the door and screaming for help. There was nobody there. I felt like I was being buried alive, like I could barely breathe. If it weren't for my flashlight, I would have been in some deep trouble. I wouldn't have been able to see a thing. Once I realized I wasn't getting out anytime soon, I reached for my phone. To my utter heartbreak, however, there was no service at all. The walls were made of cinder blocks and the door was made of metal. Plus, the entire 6-story building was on top of me. No matter what I tried, I couldn't call 911. There was absolutely nothing I could do. I was completely stuck. The only way I was getting out was if somebody opened the door from the outside. But it was 3 in the morning, and it would be hours before anybody left for work in the morning. And during that time, whoever trapped me was doing whatever they pleased in the parking garage. I heard several car alarms go off, and I knew what was happening. Somehow, they all turned off after a few minutes. I kept banging on the door and shouting, but nobody came. After a while, if I'm being completely honest, I gave up that I would be free anytime soon, and I just focused on staying calm. I sat down against the wall and I turned off my flashlight to save the battery, but only after making sure I was completely alone. Every few minutes, I banged on the door a bunch of times. It took me like 2 hours, but finally I managed to get the attention of somebody going to work early in the morning. I thanked them as they let me out, but unfortunately, the next thing I had to do was call the cops, because I quickly noticed that a dozen cars had been broken into. There was broken glass all over the parking lot from all the windows that had been shattered. Whoever it was knew exactly what they were doing. They knew how to trap me in there, and they knew how to silence the alarms of the cars they were breaking into. We only have security guards on the weekends, and it left us vulnerable on a seemingly benign Wednesday. All in all, there were tens of thousands of dollars done in damages and theft, and I was fired from my job. Not like I would want to go back anyway. The culprit was never identified on the cameras, and was never caught. I've been a night owl my whole life, so I work night shifts exclusively. I really don't work well with other people, whether they're my coworkers or not, so I picked a job I could do completely on my own and became a nighttime janitor in my local school district after I graduated from high school myself. Schools have always had nightly cleaning as a part of health codes in most areas, but obviously in recent years it's become much more important. My first job was in a fairly large K-12. There were a couple of daytime custodians as well, but at the night it was just me and one other person splitting the school down the middle. My coworkers and I barely ever interacted, which I appreciated a lot. Every single night, all the floors get mopped or vacuumed. Every desk, table, and door handle is disinfected, and every toilet, urinal, and sink also gets cleaned. It takes a full 8-hour shift to accomplish, and for that entire time, I don't talk to a single person. It's great, honestly. Most of my coworkers are women, and they don't want me talking to them either. When I tell people about my job, a lot of them think the hardest part is having to clean up after the messes left by the students. And for the most part, I guess they are right, but I always tell them I would rather plunge and clean 10 clogged and traumatized toilets every single night than ever have to do work directly with another human being all day long, especially a horde of minors. These days, there's one example I give of why I say that. It was the night after Halloween. I came in for my usual 8-to-5 shift and got started without even saying hello to my coworker. We started on opposite ends and met in the middle, so we would only see each other when we were finishing up. The first hour was mostly normal, except for one obvious thing out of ordinary. I always keep my music at a low volume on my headphones, but from outside them I kept hearing things. Usually all the other faculty are gone by 8 o'clock, but sometimes there's somebody who stays late. I couldn't decide what I was hearing through my music, but I wasn't in the mood to turn it off, so I just ignored it. A little while later, I took a break from mopping to change the water in the bucket. I was gone for about 5 minutes, but on my way back to where I stopped, I walked past one of the hallways I had just mopped, and noticed the wet floor sign had fallen over. For legal reasons, I had to step over the wet floor and stand it back up, then mop back over my tracks on the way out. Annoyed, I walked over to it, but I froze for a moment when something else caught my eye. There was another set of tracks in the water, leading to and from the sign. They were little footprints, something a kid would make. After I stood the sign back up, I followed the tracks, knowing I would have to mop over those too, basically redoing the whole hallway. The tracks ran all the way to the end where there was a flight of stairs up the second floor. From there, they dried up pretty quickly. I stormed up the stairs and got to the second floor, but nobody was there. I took my phone out of my pocket and paused my music so if anyone was running around, I would be able to hear them. Right as I looked down, I saw a flash of movement at the end of the hallway. I also heard a bunch of footsteps echoing across the empty school. So I started making my way to the end of the hall. By the time I got there, I still couldn't see anyone. But then I heard a little kid laughing. It felt like I was in a horror movie, but at that point I was more annoyed than scared. I stood there looking around for a few seconds until I heard a crash from the first floor. I rushed downstairs and nearly flipped my lid when I saw the mop bucket I had just refilled was knocked over. The water was spilling everywhere in a huge pool. I absolutely swore my head off as I went back to the nearest janitor's closet for a dry mop and bunch of towels. It took me half an hour to clean up that mess and then another 15 minutes to redo the hallway that got messed up, which meant my lunch break was down to 15 minutes. However, I was so pissed off that I walked to the other side of the school and interrupted my coworker to ask if she had been messing with me. She looked completely dumbfounded and innocent. She asked if I was alright or needed any help, but to that I just walked away. I set up again and got back to work. Another hour passed and I managed to make up some lost progress. I was angrily powering through it, debating in my head the whole time about what I should do. I thought about reporting into the school, or maybe just calling the police myself, but in the end, I figured I would seem crazy to everyone, just like I did to my coworker. So nothing happened again until 11 o'clock. Out of nowhere, the light shut off in the whole school. It was pitch black for about 3 seconds, until the dim emergency lights turned on, and then everything had a reddish hue to it. It came as a shock to me, and to be honest, I was worried. I tried to tell myself it was a malfunction, or maybe some kids messing around, but my mind was going to all sorts of possibilities. I had keys to the electrical room, where the light switches were, and I was the closest to it, so I stopped what I was doing and marched over. I was pissed off about losing more time and missing out on my entire lunch break, but halfway there, something pushed those concerns out of my head. I heard the most blood-curdling scream of my life, the panicked shriek of my coworker echoing endlessly. I stopped in my tracks, feeling like I had just been hit by an electric shock. Seconds later, I heard the sound of a door opening really loudly, like someone was ramming through it from the inside. I hoped it was my coworker escaping and not somebody else making their way into the school. I forced myself to keep going and finally made it to the electrical room. I was right outside the door, trying to find the right key, when I noticed that it was already cracked open. I pushed it open slowly, afraid of what I might see, and a shape appeared in front of me, standing unnaturally in the darkness. My blood ran cold. It could have been anyone. I gave up on trying to turn on the lights and instead reached over for my phone in my pocket. However, as soon as I moved, the figure bolted forward and slammed the door in my face. I cursed and then jumped back, stumbling until my back hit the wall behind me. Once I regained my balance, I started running. I wanted to leave, but for once in my life, I thought about the well-being of somebody else and ran to the other side of the school to find my coworker. After checking a few of her hallways, I finally found her mop bucket sitting alone in the middle of the floor, next to a bathroom. Without hesitation, I rushed over to it, hoping to not see any evidence that she had been hurt. Nothing seemed unusual except for the fact that she was nowhere to be found. I looked all around in the dim lighting, but as far as I could tell, I was alone. But not completely alone. The sound of a laughing child echoed in the distance again, striking fear into my chest. I clutched the handle of the mop for the lack of anything else to defend myself with, and I lifted it out of the bucket, holding the end of the handle out like a spear. I faced the direction of the laughter, looking down the hallway so intently I got tunnel vision. In a moment of sheer terror, someone whispered, "Hello," into my ear. I turned around and without thinking I jabbed the handle of the mop into their chest with all my might. I heard a grunt as the person that snuck up on me hit the ground and they vomited only a second later. I shouted at them to tell me who they were, but then they started to cry. I could tell they were trying to hold it back, but they couldn't. Gradually, my eyes made out what I was looking at, and it was a student, kneeled over on the floor. Suddenly, all my fear of danger was replaced with the fear of losing my job for hitting a student. However, as things shook out over the next few days, it turned out all right. Two twins in the 9th grade and their little brother got the idea to keep the spirit of Halloween going and prank the overnighters in the school by hiding in the lockers. There was one set of lockers in the whole building that wasn't in use and had no locks or ties on them, and those kids were skinny enough to fit in there and hide after doing their after-school activities. They managed to get out of being expelled, probably from crying a lot. The school district understood my actions and let me keep my job, but I was transferred to a different school. All in all, this is why I don't like people, especially kids.